Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I am back again with another phenomenal guest. But before we get there, I want to welcome everybody to the show. Again, Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. Before we get to my amazing guest this week, I want to remind everybody that if you want to find out more about my podcast, I've got over 150 episodes in the can now. Amazing stories of incredible people. You can do that by going to my brand new website I just deployed yesterday, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And you can go over to the podcast tab and you can check out who are the latest guests of the week. Okay. And also, I'd appreciate, as always, if you went over there and you gave my show a ratings and reviews, you can do that by hitting the little button, iTunes. That will take you to the iTunes nav. And it will make your way into Finding Your Summit. And it's all about popularity, not about me, of course, but about exposing other people to these stories of inspiration like my guest today. Okay. So on that note, I want to talk about a really fascinating person. She's been on the show before. She continues to make a mark out there in the planet of doing good and better for everybody else. Her name is Mariel Hemingway. So let me add Mariel to the show. Mariel, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you? You've got palm trees.
I do have palm trees because I find myself out here in Southern California. And like a lot of people, I know you're out here too. We have a similar but different lives. We both have places in Ketchum, Idaho. That's where you grew up. And I'm also out here bunkering in Southern California, and I don't think we're too far away. Yeah. Probably as the crow flies, probably 20 miles.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Hey, so listen, let me start off by asking, and this is the common question for everybody, because we're going through insane times right now. We're talking today on May 14th, 2020, and we've been going through this crazy COVID-19 pandemic that has affected so many people, so many jobs, you know, have been affected. So many lives have changed because of, in some cases, people getting very sick or passing away. And what have you and your wonderful significant other, Bobby, been doing to kind of anchor yourselves in Southern California while you're waiting this thing out?
Well, you know, I mean, the irony is we have very specific lives, should I say. I mean, we're very careful about, you know, how we spend our time outdoors, whether we're meditating, whether we're, you know, the kind of food we're eating and all these kinds of things. So our lifestyle really hasn't changed that much. Our connections to other people obviously have dramatically changed. I think what's been the most challenging is probably not seeing my daughters enough or something like that. But, you know, for us, it's about staying focused on being the best we can be physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Like there he is in the background. We focus on our food. We focus on our exercise. We focus on connecting in nature. I'm very big into earthing, grounding, literally taking my shoes off and going for hikes every single day out on trails with no shoes on. And because I believe it's one of the great ways to stay literally grounded, but also to help with anxiety, help with the uncertainty of times. So, you know, it's really about being very diligent about how you're living your life during this weird time that we're all, you know, everybody's in the same boat. Everybody doesn't know when it's going to be completely over or will it ever be completely over. So how you fill your time is very, very important. So we wake up in the morning, we meditate on a little patch of sand that is grounded. We watch the sunrise pretty much every single day. We're very fortunate to be able to do those things because I can't imagine being in Brooklyn or New York City where you can barely go outside. So I feel like the focus on lifestyle is critical at this point in our lives.
Yeah. So, you know, look, I was reflecting back and I told you before the pod, I went back and I listened to our pod and I went back and I saw all your stuff and you've got so much content and you and Bobby continue to do so many amazing things together and creating this different content and really driven, I think, by purpose. And that's a big thing in my life. And I think everybody should be driven by purpose, right? And so as I was thinking about your life, I was thinking about it in terms of three different circles. One, you've got this famous family life in the background. Then you've got this acting life. And then you've got this self-care around mental illness life. And they all like connect together, obviously. But they're all very different. And so yes. What you were talking about just now, and we'll probably end up jumping all over the board, you know, and
yeah, no worries.
You know, scattered a little bit the way that we communicate this. But I want to talk about self-care because you talked about one of the things yes. that is super important to you is your morning routine. And that has to do with yes. being quiet and yoga. I don't know if yoga bleeds into meditation, but tell me a little bit more yes. about what that practice is about. And then we'll kind of spill that into the whole mental illness, you know, background with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in my opinion, you know, self-care is healthcare. I think more than anything, taking care of ourselves is our responsibility. And it also needs to turn into our joy because our lifestyle is everything. You know, what we do in the morning, our morning routines, our you know, whether we watch a sunrise and ground, how we make our coffee in the morning, whether we make it with intention, whether we're quiet and still and present doing the things that we're doing. And one of the things about this pandemic that I absolutely love is the fact that it has enabled us to get still and quiet and really dig deep into our lives and what matters and choosing the things in our lives that are going to make us grow and become bigger as human beings, become bigger and better at being ourselves. So yeah, so our lifestyle is critical. And when you talk about my family, when you talk about acting, when you talk about mental health, see, I think all of those things are kind of interconnected anyway, because the first thing that you have to do in life is to look at your story, your history, where you come from. Once you look at your story, your history, your patterns, your heritage, you can then determine the choices that you've been making your entire life and whether you can shift those by the acknowledgement of the past that we've come from. So that's kind of a critical part in, you know, I call it telling our story. So once you tell your story, that enables you to unlock the fear that you have around the history of our stories, because we all have a little bit of fear around going into the past and drudging up old feelings. But as I tell a lot of people that I speak with, because I speak around the country, you know, memories can't hurt you. They can only inform you of what you've been doing and the choices that you've been making. So once we look at those stories, then we are on the path to our own recovery. And the recovery is from worrying about what has already happened. And you can't worry about what has already happened because it already happened. And you can't worry about what's going to happen because we don't know. And what perfect time that we're in, this time of uncertainty. We simply don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So being present seems to be our kind of our key goal, is to stay here, you know, be where you are now.
Why is that so difficult for so many people to dig back and unearth some things that might be unpleasant? And you said it right. Well, you said a couple things. One was that everybody's got a different family history and background, the way they grew up, right? So sometimes going back and pulling those things out that maybe something wasn't as pleasant isn't fun, right? And so it makes it much difficult. So, you know, what are those strategies, or why is it such a big hurdle from your experience on why just to keep shoving those things down?
Well, you know, I think that it's human nature to not want to feel pain. We don't want to feel, especially emotional pain. So we stuff them away, we put them away. And childhood trauma, you know, not just the memories, but the trauma of those memories stays in our DNA. It stays in our bodies. And until you look at it, you don't have the ability to let it go. But once you start to, you know, kind of almost like excavate it, you know, like dig into it and look at it and go, okay, so this crappy thing happened when I was 12 years old or 7 years old. And I'm going to look deeply, and I'm going to really see what I felt then and realize that I'm not that person anymore. And I don't need to keep reacting in my life today in the same way that I did when I was 7 or 13 or 12 or whatever it was. But that's what we do. That's human nature. We sort of take on the reactions that we had during traumatic experiences as a child. So we repeat those patterns because we're so afraid of going into those feelings. But it's why I say memories can't hurt you. They really can't. You can have a reaction to them. But that's not, it's not going to re-traumatize you. It's going to release you. I think it's the beginning of freedom.
Yeah, no, that empowerment that somebody can get by really addressing those things and then doing something about it and moving forward. As we step back into kind of your life a little bit, and now we're kind of, we're going to shift a little bit from the self-care that we're talking about. And we bleed that back into your family. And again, I want to set this up. I mean, I know this fact, but I want to make sure that other people out there kind of really understand that, because it's so amazing that it's fascinating. And while sad at the same time, which is this family history, I don't know, it started with your grandfather, Ernest Hemingway, or not, but you've had all these 7 suicides in your family lineage. And so I think when you start going back there, you know, again, everybody's got their different story, but you've been on this path of making sure you don't end up in that same place. And so you've really had to dig in and do the hard work of facing your family, their flaws, you know, and how you can make sure that you don't repeat that behavior into your daughters, you know, going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's always somebody in a family that says, I'm done. I'm changing this. We're not going there anymore. So, and I think I made that choice. I think I made the choice to say, the buck stops here. I don't want to hand this off to my children. It doesn't mean that my daughters don't have problems and don't have issues. And I'm sure I've done a lot of that. but I don't want to give them a family legacy, because it didn't just start with my grandfather. My grandfather's father committed suicide or took his life. My grandmother Hadley's father took his life. And then a great uncle and a great aunt and a uncle and a cousin and my own sister. So there's just this legacy of like traumatic mental health issues. And I think honestly, if my grandfather had lived during this time, they would have, you know, diagnosed him bipolar. So growing up knowing that I came from this great family, but I also feared them. I was terrified I was going to, you know, wake up one day and be a complete nut job, you know, like I'm going to be crazy. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so scary. You know, and I think we all have fears like that. We wonder if it's, it's kind of like the pandemic. Is it how can I pick it up? Yeah. You know, it's like, am I going to get it? I'm going to catch it. When's it going to happen? I've lived enough years now and I've done enough work on myself. And because my self-care is so important, I know that that's not an issue for me because I know how to regulate my own mental health. I know what I need to do to regulate that. And my message to people I invite people to really look into their own lives because we all have our own solution. We all have it. We all have the ability to find what works, the key that works, that keeps us body, mind, spirit in balance. And it's different for everyone. Your choices are not going to be my choices or your girlfriend or my, or Bobby, you know, like he has to eat differently. He has to do different things. We all have a different pattern, but we all have one. And that's where I sort of think, you know, self-care is healthcare. Mental health care is our self-care, and it's our responsibility. So I think, you know, we live in a society where we want to give responsibility to somebody else, to the guy in the white coat. Some doctor is going to tell us what to do, and then we'll be fine. Our responsibility is to figure out what works for us in our physical health and our mental health and our emotional health. We have to figure that. It doesn't mean we don't need help. Because we do need help. We need to speak to people. You need to have conversations with experts about stuff and dig into your own stuff. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. You need to go, how does this feel for me? Okay, this is right. Or, that doesn't feel right for me at all. You know, and you have to learn to listen to your body and your emotional body. And it's not easy work, but once you start to really figure that out, it's exciting to know that you do have the ability to be your best self, no matter what times we're going through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I know one of the things that's common, between both of us is I found my peace and I really find the answers when I'm out in nature. Now, not that I can't find that down here at the beach right now, but majority of the year I'm in Ketchum, Idaho, and that's of course where you grew up, and having access to those mountains right outside the door and being able to go walk over and give a tree a hug and have butterflies flitter by. It's amazing how many problems I've solved, not only in Ketchum, Idaho, in the mountains, but also this quest around the world of climbing these other mountains, because there's so much solitude in that environment. Yes. Because you're tethered, 30 feet apart or something, depending on the mountain, and you're not talking to. So it's hours upon hours upon time. It was just thinking. You're not listening. You're just thinking and you're problem solving. And I know one thing, I'm a lot crankier when I don't get up first thing in the morning and do, my self-care, which is you said it perfectly. Absolutely. We all have our different definition of what that's all about. Right. But 100%. I do know. So there's as we again cross a little bit into, again, staying on this whole theme of self-care, one of the things that I found really fascinating, and we talked about this last time, is the movie Running From Crazy. So again, going back to what you were talking about before, which is, is this contagious? Is this actually going to happen to me sometime? and really taking a time out and going back and analyzing, and you came out with all this amazing footage that you got that ended up being this. I mean, I watch a lot of docs and I mean, they're either really good or I turn them off. There's usually not a middle ground.
Right.
And it was so fascinating what you guys had put together. And the first thing, and the most fascinating, because another person I'm really fascinated with is Oprah, because she's a self-starter. She's hit it out of the park, obviously. And yet she's still got this amazing connection. And so the question, there's two things. One is, how did you get her to become a producer of that film? That was one. And then I also saw a while ago where you and Bobby might have been at her place in Malibu or Santa Barbara or someplace. And it was just all this soul to soul connection that she was talking to you guys about. And so tell me more about her, how she got involved in these different projects.
So I have a really close friend named Lisa Erspammer who used to work. She worked for Oprah for years when she had her show on ABC. And then she was also one of the creative directors over at the OWN network. And we were really close. And one day she looked at me and she said, "We need to do a documentary on your family and your family's life." And I said, "What are you, crazy? They're nuts. No." She goes, "That's just the point." She said, "We have to do it because everybody has a story. Everybody comes from something imperfect." So we thought about it and we hashed ideas around, and she was working with Oprah, working over at the OWN network. And Oprah realized, you know, that this was a very important subject. Obviously she was also, OWN was a producing partner, but then Oprah herself got very, very interested in the legacy and the story behind it. So that's how she became a producing partner on Running From Crazy. And then you were talking about Super Soul Sunday. I did with her, Bobby and I did with her in, it was in Hawaii, in her house in Hawaii. It's so beautiful. And we had such a good time. And she invited us out there, and we did Super Soul Sunday at her ranch up on the mountain in Maui. And it was just extraordinary. It was incredible, and showed us her gardens and stuff like that. We were promoting, Bobby and I wrote a book together called Running With Nature. And we were promoting that book and talking about basically what we're talking about today, and that's lifestyle. You know, how you do anything is how you do everything, and how you do everything is how you do anything. And it's just putting all the little pieces together of life, everyday life. It's so important, the minutiae of our lives. You know, like drinking good water is so imperative to our good health and our well-being. So, among many other things.
So I have gotten to know you, right? Because we both live in Ketchum. I reached out, and these are my words. We formed this friendship, as well as your significant other, Bobby. And I consider you a really authentic, pure, just good soul, right? That we need to have on this planet. Thanks. Yeah. And I don't know Oprah, but considering how amazing she is and how big she's become and wealthy and everything else, she still seems at the end of the day just to really get it, right? And that's the biggest thing.
100%. I don't mean to interrupt you, but it reminded me, we had a premiere here in Los Angeles. It wasn't like fancy premiere, but it was of Running From Crazy. And she came and she did the, you know, Q&A that you do after you watch the movie. And she led the Q&A. And I mean, we've seen her on television. We've seen her in podcasts. We've seen her on her show. We've seen her in Super Soul Sunday. But to be in the presence of somebody who listens the way that she does and doesn't think about the question that she has on the, you know, index card in front of her, but really listens to what you have to say in such a way that is so, so full and so rich and so complete. You know, I mean, I'm a big, one of my quests in life is to become a better listener. It's something my grandfather talked about, that people don't listen. Most people never listen. You know, they're thinking about, what are they going to say? And so to watch Oprah, the only other person that was as extraordinary, maybe a little bit more extraordinary than Oprah when it came to listening and taking somebody in, was His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Wow. His listening ability was absolutely extraordinary. It made you feel so seen and so heard. It took my breath away. But Oprah has a very similar quality. Her humanity is right out there. It's, you know, her heart is on her sleeve. She really cares. I mean, unless she's the best actress on the planet, she really genuinely cares. And she had new questions. She talked about things that I'd never thought about, you know? So she's an extraordinary human being.
Well, so are you. And I'll tell you what, people have asked me before about sales. What's it like to be a top salesperson? And the answer is listening. It's not talking, which is kind of counterintuitive, yeah. Right? A little bit.
Yeah.
So Running From Crazy, the thing that it's a fascinating movie because there's all this old footage with your parents in particular, and you guys have this thing called Wine Time, and you grew up with two other sisters. They're both older. Margot became this superstar model, really one of the first ones in the world to get that kind of fame on the cover of all these different famous magazines. And she went off and then she got into acting, but she wasn't centered in the way that she needed to be to really have all that fame that came to her early on. I want to ask you about your first movie that you did, Lipstick. And the thing that beyond, here you are very young, 12, 13 years old, and you're on this movie script and your sister Margot invites you to come because they were looking for a kid to play the role of the sister. And she said, well, what about Mariel, my sister? So somehow or another, you get the gig, right? And so I was just rethinking about this last night, and what kept coming back into my mind was you end up getting nominated for a Golden Globe. And how does somebody go on to a movie set that's never had one day of acting class, I don't think, and you end up becoming the star of this film, which was actually sort of a disaster because your sister got panned in this particular film?
Yeah, it was, I mean, for me, I didn't even know what a Golden Globe was. I didn't know anything. It's true. I showed up. I was so excited that my sister would even consider me to be in anything because I was truly an annoying little sister.
Yeah. You know?
I think I spent a great deal of the years that she was in the house just tattling on her, you know, getting her in trouble. So I was surprised that she even liked me. But anyway. She was 7 years older than me. So she was this young woman and I was a young girl, and she invited me to play her little sister in a movie. And it was her dream to be an actress. Very, you know, in retrospect and thinking about it, it was heart-wrenching, you know, because it wasn't until years later I realized, you know, her whole life, she just felt like she was second best. She wasn't Ernest Hemingway, and then I come along and I get really good reviews. I get nominated for things and my career starts and I am in films and television stuff. And I realized that, you know, it was like I was living out her dream, and it was heartbreaking when I came to understand how she just couldn't reconcile the fact that it wasn't working for her. And that's heartbreaking. That's really, you know, it's a hard one. It's a hard one because I didn't intend to become an actress. I didn't, you know, I was 13 years old, 12, 13. I wanted to be a marine biologist 1 week. And then, you know, I wanted to be an architect. Neither of which I did, but I did become an actress, and I think it broke my sister's heart, and it was sad and horrible. But you know, you learn a lot by the film is very compelling because it shows this sort of breakdown of somebody who had so many desires to be something significant and couldn't see that she really did have an impact on the world, but she couldn't see that she was making the impact that she wanted to make. So she made a lot of tough choices, and, you know, she became a very severe alcoholic and did a lot of drugs, and it was just rough. She had a really rough time of it. And seeing that now, and especially after watching Running From Crazy, being a part of it, making it, realizing her pain, that was unbelievable. There's some footage in Running From Crazy that Barbara Koppel, who's this amazing director who directed it, she found this footage. She didn't tell me about it. So you were talking about something called Wine Time. All of a sudden, I go to the premiere of Running From Crazy, and I'm, you know, I'm in dialogue with Barbara a lot about how things are going to be put together, but I'm not in the editing room. She doesn't tell me that she's got this footage. I see it on the day of it, you know, of the premiere in New York City. And my mind is blown because I was telling her in an interview about Wine Time, about certain things that happened in Idaho, and there was footage of it. There was literally my mother sitting on the kitchen sink with her legs crossed in the way she always did. My sister's there, my dad's there, and they're talking and they're drinking wine. And Wine Time, by the way, was anytime, all the time. But Wine Time, it was just bizarre, this weird, tense time that for me just represented their kind of their degradation, they fell apart at Wine Time. That's when, you know, then they would start out happy and then it would kind of go into just a sad and depressing time after that, because once you drink too much, sometimes with some people, they can become, you know, belligerent and unhappy. And so it was just fascinating. The entire experience was really wonderful for me, and it led me to a passion of mine, which is, you know, I want to help people with mental health, with people that suffer from suicidal ideation, with any kind of problem. I'm producing a show on the prevention of suicide for teenagers that Time Magazine is one of my producing partners. I'm hosting that. I have a foundation called Dead Poets Foundation, and that's incredibly important to me, to create environments where people can feel safe to talk about their story and to get help. I will also, what's critical about mental health for me, and especially suicide, is that there are solutions. And I think people think that when they're going through highly anxious times or depressing times, that there's nothing that they can do. And that's simply not true. There are many, many different solutions. And again, it's just like our physical health. Mental health is the same way. There's a certain kind of combination of things. It's like a recipe that will work for you. So it's about finding that. Anyway, I could go on and on. Uh-huh. Ooh, la, la,
and I think no, it's all good. Well, look, it's all connected. And, you know, it really started from the question about being in lipstick and being, you know, 7 years younger from your sister, and then you getting all this notoriety. And then, you know, at the end of the day, it's called running from crazy, but you really can't run from your past, right? And so
No,
you can't. And so you've got this whole notion of, and part it was is part of the culture. I mean, maybe your mom and your dad, the way they were raised, you know, there was dysfunction there. That I'm sure there was. But back in the 50s, now we're not talking about the 50s necessarily, but when they were growing up, their parents, you know, is come home at night at 5 o'clock and have your cocktail, right? And yeah. A lot of the way the world has shifted, you know, we're have all these diets now, and there's yoga and meditation and the gyms, and everything has exploded to a different level from what it used to be. And so, you know, the way that you've connected these dots, I think, from participating to recognition, to doing something about it, which is what you're talking about. It all matters, right? It all matters. It all counts. And more than anything, which is so beautiful, is the awareness that you're giving people, like there's a solution, there's a way out. And when people have, 100%. You know, at least, yeah, right, an answer, and you're talking about it and you take the shame away, it can really give a lot of people some hope.
100%. I mean, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, we do. It's so funny because you think about the way that they were brought up. Nobody went, you know, they didn't do, there wasn't self-awareness courses. People didn't try to figure out their stuff. They just had a cocktail and hoped that, you know.
No way. That's the way it was. And,
like digging in, like, what do I know about myself and all that stuff? But, you know, thank God we live in a time where yoga leads to meditation, leads to self-exploration, to self-awareness. These are the, and it's a critical time. And again, we're in a kind of holding pattern in our lives where it's a wonderful opportunity to look deep and go, look, this works in my life, this doesn't. Because our parents or maybe our grandparents, they just weren't brought up that way. And so that's why it's a little bit harder for our generation to get to the point where we really unravel that stuff, because it wasn't taught to us. It's something we've had to discover ourselves. It's like you going out in nature every morning. If you don't get your, you know, if you don't go hike to the top of Baldy much faster than me, but I'll get there. But I mean, if you don't do that, you know that that's part of your secret recipe. You know that that makes you amazing, you know? So it's cool.
So there's this other movie that you were in, and I want to take about two more of them. One is Manhattan. Again, as I was thinking about something different that we didn't talk about last time that we had our exchange, our podcast, you know, so you go in and now you do this amazing job. Once again, it's the follow-up movie, and you're cast by Woody Allen, right? And now looking back on it today, not back then necessarily, but today, you know, a lot of weird stuff has come out about Woody Allen and his fascination for young girls and all this stuff. And here he is paired with you when you're 16, 17, and he's playing the love interest, or you're playing the love interest of Woody Allen. So at that time, did you think that was just kind of odd, or was it just a part and that's all it was, you know, in that period?
Well, for me, I was a really naive girl. I went off to New York City to be in this movie with Woody Allen. I'd never had a boyfriend. I wasn't sophisticated or cool like this character Tracy that I was playing in the movie. So it never seemed weird. And I want to be very clear about this. He was never inappropriate with me. Did he like me? Yeah, I think he liked me. But I was a young girl from Idaho. Woody Allen wasn't going to be my first boyfriend. There ain't no way in hell. So, you know, I mean, I don't really, that's the one thing I just don't feel comfortable, you know, like expressing a feeling about that and him, because there was no impropriety at the time of that film when it came to me. So I don't know, you know, I don't judge. I think he's an artist. I think he's a weird guy, and I don't know. I don't actually know the truth. I was not there. So, you know, it's just, we haven't been connected for years, but, anyway.
Great answer. Moving on. So you've done, now listen, you've done over, I think, over 45, pretty much. This is so fascinating to me, because I heard you on another telecast, and really what you were saying is that if you're going to be in Hollywood and be involved in the movie industry, especially as a woman, you really have to understand that these things go in waves, and you got to be willing to ride it out, which is just like trash your life because something's not going right for 10 years. You just never know what's going to recirculate. But basically, you have been involved in film at some level or TV for 40 years. You've done over 45 different projects. And as I was going through the chronological order, like literally every single year since I think 1976, boom, 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 boom. You've done all these things, and like, what a tribute to you for longevity being a woman.
I need to call you when I'm insecure, because that was really nice. I was like, oh, really?
Well, it's true though. No, it's true. It's fantastic.
No, but you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, my daughter was here the other day. My oldest daughter is an actress. And I said to her, I said, you know, it's just, you just never know when it's going to come and when it's going to go. The ebb and flow is always, the movie industry is the hardest. It's not dissimilar to being on lockdown. Yeah. It's just insane. Sometimes you're like so busy, you can't, you know, you can't think straight. You can't think past certain projects, and then it's dead. And then nobody wants you and nobody knows who you are. You know, it's hard to be in your 50s and have somebody know who you are anymore. But if you hang in there, it does go like this. I mean, I'm directing and starring in a film this year, hopefully this year. And so it always shifts. You have to have faith in it, but it's also another good reason to have something else to do. you know, find other passions. You know, that's why mental health became a big passion for me, writing books about it, doing, you know, the physical health stuff. Thank God I so love being an athlete. I think being an athlete is one of the great things in life because I think that it helps you to focus mentally and emotionally. You know, and I think it gets you through rough times. I think being physical, because our bodies need to work things out that our head can't quite deal with. But yeah, the Hollywood's a weird industry. It's just tough. It's just a tough industry, but it does go in waves.
How much was the movie Personal Best, and it had to do with the Olympics and all this stuff? And I mean, I don't believe there was a stunt double. I mean, there's the hurdles, the high hurdles and the high jump and all these different, and you know, you must have, part of getting that role must have been that you were actually able to take on a lot of these different really physical demanding individual sports within the sport of track.
Yes. Well, you know, I trained for 9 months prior to making the film. Thank God. And I wanted that movie. I really wanted that movie because I grew up in Sun Valley, just like that's your home in the summer. You know what it's like. I hiked mountains. I ran. I was outdoors all the time. I was an athlete as a kid. I was on the ski team. I did a lot of outdoor stuff and I felt that I was an athlete. Being a track athlete, on the other hand, was different. It was tough. It was not easy, you know, to be a track athlete because it was a different discipline. I'd never done it. And especially hurdling. Hurdling was like insane because you couldn't fake it. You could fake the high jump. And Dick Fosbury, who lives up in Ketchum, taught me how to do the Fosbury flop. But I could make, you know, I could put it at 5'2" and jump that, not and make it look like it was 6, whatever the record was. And you could fake that I long jumped a long ways, or you could fake the shot put, but you couldn't fake the hurdles. And if you put them too low, it looks stupid. So it was one of the greatest films as far as teaching me discipline in physical body and how to work out. Like I learned how to work out. I've done a certain amount of weight training. You know, I know how to do things because of having done that film. And, you know, I worked out with athletes. I was taught by some of the greatest pentathletes and coaches that were teaching, you know, Olympic athletes at the time. You know, it's probably not the same now, but it was pretty powerful. And I'm so grateful to have been able to make that film.
Well, you've got this wonderful partner in Bobby Williams, your significant other, who's really created this playpen for you guys to continue to work out as athletes.
Yes.
And challenge yourself. And you know, hey, listen, if anybody out there wants to feel young, act young, all those things, you know, drive yourself, make a physical challenge. I know you guys have, you know, trampolines and climbing ladders and tightrope walks and all these different things. He was telling me before we came on about the kettlebells, and I would be jacked up to come up there and just get pushed. But you know, when you get through those different things, you really accomplish something. It's hard. That's why they call it work out, not play out, right? And so it's really cool that you've continued. Taking a quick shift, one of the things that's so, to me, I love when people do this because you've done this successfully, which is you keep reinventing. So you haven't been a one-trick pony, just, you know, I'm going to be an actress and that's it. And you've had these connections that we talked about in terms of your foundation around mental wellness and self-care and all this stuff. But I'm still trying to get one book out at the door. I'm still trying to figure out how that works. And you've done like 7 or 8 of these books. You know, some of them you've co-authored with Bobby. But like, how do you come up with kind of a new theme? And you've talked about kind of being invisible and some other titles like that, about yoga and that. Just like, how do you keep finding another way to write another book? Because it's so hard to do, I think.
Well, look, I'm a Hemingway. I've got to figure out how to make a book. No, I'm kidding.
That's a good answer.
Man, come on.
That is a good answer.
No, you know, it is hard. I think it's kind of one of those things. It's like, it either comes to you or somebody says something like, you should do that. Now, let's be fair. I've only done self-help. So it's not like I'm writing this. I mean, but it's still writing and it's still coming up with the story. I've told kind of my own personal story twice in Out Came the Sun, which is a book that my most recent book, Out Came the Sun, Invisible Girl. There, it's really about the family history. It's kind of like Running from Crazy, only it's in book form, and it goes into detail about my life and dealing with Hollywood and my own struggles with my own depression and mental health stuff and blah blah blah. I think that when you have a lot of life experiences, you have to trust that those life experiences are there to inform you, especially if you want to write something, inform you on what you're going to write. I mean, you have so many incredible stories, you yourself. I can't imagine that you just need to write your bloody book. Just publish the book. Okay?
Yeah, no, I get it. But I know it is. I think it's also action creates reaction. And I think it's easy to say and hard to do, and to actually put pen to paper and then have it published.
Well, once you do the first one, it's a different deal. Because then it's like, oh, okay, well, it's not so bad. Because it's scary. The first time I wrote it in a journal. I faxed it to a friend because I couldn't type. He typed it. And I never really thought it was a book until it was a book. And then I was terrified that I'd written a book. And I was going on television talking about it. I was like, oh, shit. I wrote a book. it was so crazy. But then once you do it, it's like, you just do it. And it's good. It's liberating. Writing is, I mean, whether or not somebody reads it, the writing itself, writing and speaking, and probably you feel this way with podcasts, it's so like you learn stuff about yourself. Even I even think probably when you're interviewing people, you'd like, oh my God, wow, I'm like that, or I do that. You know, there's this wonderful revelation that happens in writing. It's one of the keys. Like I talk about telling your story. I mean, you don't need to publish a book, but telling your story is so freeing. It liberates you from all kinds of story that we come from that we want to latch on to. Because once you write it or you say it in person, then it's just a story. Then it has no hold on you. You know, it's like, it's just a story.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't really mean anything. And, you know, it happened so long ago.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, it's just, as I said before, it's still really cool that you do learn about yourself when you write things down. I do learn about myself when I interview different people. I've published, I think, 151 episodes, and I probably have 180 in the can. And there are so many people like you. Obviously their own story of being burned and coming back and have no arms and no legs, or, you know, there's some crazy adversity that they've really had to fight through. And all of a sudden, when you start talking to people, it really makes me feel better that my problems aren't as bad as maybe I thought they were. Right. And that's just part of the magic. And that's also part of the growth, and you got to keep putting your nose out there. And sometimes you said this earlier in the pod, it's not easy to like stick your neck out there and just like, this is who I am, and really confront those things. And when you do, you're really empowering and liberating.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It is. And it's so humbling to hear other people's stories. I remember when I first started speaking and I would tell my story and suicides and whatever, and it sounded really traumatic, but you know, I never really thought about it as traumatic. And then people afterwards would come up to me and they would tell me their story, and they would, you know, talk about what I considered horrific, sad, scary, intolerable traumas that they had survived. And I thought to myself, this is not, and each one of them said, your story is so much like mine. And the truth is, our stories weren't at all the same, but what we have in common, because we're humans, is that we sense the emotion of the story. So it's not that the story is the same, the facts or the whatever. It's that we our heart feels the trauma of somebody else's trauma, and it feels very similar. So I just say it's great.
Yeah. So where do you see your path going from here? Because I've seen there's this connection from your family, your acting life, self-care, mental illness, and now you've created a foundation. You're in another acting, knock on wood, program coming up. And this next year, where do you see yourself in 5 years or 10 years? Are you thinking that far out, or are you just really trying to stay over your skis and think about what can I do today? And I'm on this really healthy, right path going forward.
Well, you know, here's the thing. My passion is to be mindful. My passion is to be present. But the truth is, we live in the modern world, and we have to think about our future in the sense that, you know, you have to have kind of projections. You have to think about things. I'm not sure what it will look like, you know, but I'm fairly sure that Bobby and I and our sort of health and wellness sort of focus in life will be very prominent somehow, some way. And I'd like to see myself directing a lot more. Directing and perhaps acting. The great news is you get older, I'm not as married to outcomes anymore. I really want to see the process happen. And I love the creative process. I love making films because filmmaking is a community. And I think because of the difficult times we're all going through, being reconnected to a community that is in it for the good of all of us, that's going to be imperative for all of us to find things that we feel that everybody's in it for the good of the world, or at least the good of each other and the good of our communities. So I guess more of that. I don't know exactly what that looks like, but there's definitely Idaho and there's definitely California in that.
Well, I hope there's more Idaho, and you're welcome to direct me going up Everest next year if you'd like.
I would love that.
That's going to be a big
challenge. That would be amazing. Well, you're going to have to, hang with Bob because he's got a technology that's going to help you so that you don't have any adjustment to the altitude.
Well, that's what I love that. I love that. Hey, look, any kind of advantage I can get, I'll take all day long. So,
yeah.
Listen, awesome. Mariel, as always, such a joy to talk with you anytime. Look forward to reconnecting with you, if not here in California, back in our little cozy hometown of Ketchum, Idaho. And yeah. Nothing but success for you going forward and all your different
Thank
projects
you so
that
much.
You have your hands in.
Thank you so much. And the best to you as well.
Cool. One last Thanks. Thing, too, I just wanted to drop in is I know your website, I think it's MarielHemingway.com, correct?
It's MarielHemingway.co, C-O.
Got it.
Don't ask me why. There's a complication.
Yeah.
If you go to .com, it'll take you to C-O. So, yeah, there's that. There's Mariel Hemingway on Instagram and Mariel Hemingway official fan page. That all sounds very glorious, like somebody else does it, but it's just me.
Awesome stuff. All right. Listen, okay, peace, cool. Love, and all those
thank
things.
You.
Thank you so
awesome.
Much.
Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
As a quarterback, I love sports. But sometimes when I get hit on my blind side, front side, and put on my backside, I wonder, is Sport Clips better than sports? Because Sport Clips haircuts is sports on TV, plus a relaxing haircut, hot steam towel, and massaging shampoo, which is better than sports plus Sport Clips. It's a game changer. Check in online at sportclips.com.